Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaf Flag, the aftermatch podcast for the LFC Red Poets. Tonight, we look back at Liverpool's hard 4-2-1 victory at home to Brighton, which returned them to the summit of the FA Premier League. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and I'm joined tonight by Tom Keegan, Pete Warburton, and Ben Kent Jr. To start tonight, I think there's only one place we can start before we start talking and delving too much into the game. Let's get this out the way. I've been going the game now since the 1970s, and today I witnessed one of the most inept refereeing performances that I've ever had the displeasure to see at Anfield today. A referee who is totally out of his depth, and if he's good enough to referee in the Premier League, it just shows the depth of the problems that the PGMOL have. Tom, I'd like your reaction to David Coote's performance today.
I tweeted earlier, didn't I, Les? I don't think he's Premier League standard. I think, to be honest, I thought he started badly and he just went downhill fast. The first foul that he gave, which he carried behind his back, he turned and gave a free kick and then booked somebody. And it's just... He must have eyes in the back of his head. It's just every time he went to the floor. And I even said before, I felt that he wasn't just bad to us. He was bad to them as well. He was absolutely abysmal. It's probably one of the most inept performances I've ever seen from a referee. And that takes some the biscuits from this season. Because I thought Simon Hooper is probably the worst I'd ever seen in my life, but Coote surpasses him by a country mile.
Yeah, Pete. I mean, how this guy is allowed anywhere near, you know, a multi-billion-pound product that teams are fighting, you know, to win major prizes, and he's put in charge of games where there's, you know, there's jeopardy involved. You know, either with the whistle on the field or in a VAR in Stockley Park. It's just beyond me. He's just so far out of his depth for both teams. You know, he was appalling for... I want to make this point clear. He was appalling for both teams. He did not have a clue what was going on today, I didn't think.
I thought he brought Jeff Winter back from the Derby all those years ago. Was that a net? I mean, some of the decisions, and like you say, it wasn't just against Liverpool, although obviously we look at from, you know, rose-tinted glasses, but some of the decisions he was making were amusing. And even like the Brighton fans, I mean, it's a lot when the crowd disagree with the referee, but to actually start singing cheese, as the cop did, and then within 30 seconds, it was a wind-up by the Brighton fans, but even the Brighton fans joined in on the next decision because we were just bemused. We were actually looking at one another and thinking, I don't know how he's arrived at some of these decisions. And he was so card happy. It was untrue. And I'm amazed, actually, that the full complement of players stayed on the pitch, because I thought he just started waving cards about for whatever reason. You know, I think Danny Welbeck may have got booked for dissent. McAllister got booked for an innocuous, you know,
tackle. See the McAllister one? He was behind him. And next
I don't know if he's going on the say so of Brighton players or whatever, but
he did, yeah.
Hard, you know, and it was ridiculous. But like I say, like you say, it wasn't just Liverpool fans who were up in arms, it was the Brighton fans as well. And it says a lot when the referee gets booed off at half time by both sets of fans, to be honest.
Yeah. Ben, there was a decision. You know, amongst many that we've been using, but there's one that was on your side in the first half where a Brighton fella went down and fell over, and he sort of stopped and sort of thought about it. Liverpool got the ball, went to play a forward, then he blew for a free kick.
Yeah.
And it was just bizarre. You know, if you were watching that performance for the top quality Sunday league game, you know, for going for the Premier League Cup or something, or the National Cup, and you're watching him perform like that, you think, where did he get this idea from? You know, he was absolutely so far removed from what you were, you know, from the normal standard of Premier League referees, which is poor. But he was so far below that standard, it was unbelievable to see.
It was just, he started the game off as he went on. And I thought after that decision that he made after 2 minutes where he didn't see it against McAllister, I thought, he can't get any worse than that. But Christ almighty, he proved me wrong. You know, the worst thing that he did today, for me, amongst a load of garbage, Pascal Gross got booked. And then about 10 minutes later, he asked for a yellow card for one of our players. And he didn't book him for that. But then he went and booked two further Brighton players for doing exactly the same thing in the second half. And I'm not being funny. I haven't seen a referee book somebody for doing that for a long time. So fair play for doing it, but do it all the time. Pascal Gross should have been sent off. It was refreshing to hear Tom criticise a referee because I thought surely even Tom must have realised how bad he was today. But yeah, I mean, he wasn't bad just for us. He was bad for them. He was just garbage, utter garbage. And the Premier League can brand itself on the so-called best league in the world, but it's not if it's going to be officiated in that way. They need to massively look at it, and Howard Webb needs to go.
Yeah, Tom, funny enough, I seen Mike Hanley come over at half-time. Yeah. And you know, Mike, he's been on the show a couple of times, and he said, a lot of the time he will defend the referee because he looks through it with his referee's eyes on rather than my red tinted glasses. And I was expecting to come over at half time and say, oh, you know, he's not being that bad, Les, take your red tinted glasses off. And he come over and he said, before you say anything, Les, he has been absolutely terrible. He said, how the hell he has come to some of the decisions that he's made in that first half is beyond me.
I think it was just the game. It comes to something when the game's too big for a referee, isn't it? And you're thinking Liverpool versus Brighton, I think what he'd done, every time a player went down, you know, whether he saw it or he didn't see it, he'd give a free kick. You know, and I think he set the stall out right from the very beginning. And that set it. He made the terrible mistake after 2 minutes. And then he compounded it, didn't he? One after the other, after the other, after the other. To such an extent. I didn't think when McAllister got fouled and he booked someone for fouling McAllister, he wasn't going to give that first. He actually stopped, and I thought he's not going to do anything here. You know, and what's it going? Then he looked across at McAllister rolling, and then he stops and then gives him, blows up, and then gives then books the player that you've done it. You know, I was saying to the lad, to John next to me, I was saying, you know, he hasn't actually seen half of this. He's missed half the things. So what he's doing, he's just booking them because in case he got it, because he never actually quite saw it, he booked it. So someone asked me going out, and they said, how many players? He said, how many players did Des come and give me a lift? How many players got booked, do you reckon? And I was saying, well, I think we got five, I think.
It's more.
Four. I was going through to four. We had Joe Gomez took one for the team. Gakpo got one. Yeah, McAllister got one.
Van Dijk
got booked, yeah.
And Luis Diaz, I think, got one.
We got six bookings in total.
Six. I thought, so like, and you know what?
There wasn't a bad tackle in the game.
I just said, I was just going to say that, Ben. Mm. It wasn't a dirty game. It was quite an open game.
There was a couple of tactical fouls, wasn't there? Like, I think the Van Dijk one was tactical foul. Like, you can't argue with that.
So was Gakpo's.
Yeah.
Joe Gomez. I loved what Joe Gomez done. Yeah. He was going past him. He brought him down. No ifs, no buts. Yeah. You know, like, we were exposed. Take it for the team. I'll do that. I won't complain for that one.
Yeah. But you know what? You know the one, one thing I was amazed about today, Pete, you know, with the referee's performance, I was convinced that either one or both of Klopp and De Zerbi were going to get sent off today. Mm. Because he was that bad, the referee, that I just thought he's going to do something here or something's going to happen. The whole thing's going to kick off. And, you know, the referee, and the referee's going to go over and send either one, because De Zerbi's on a short fuse, as we know. You know, he's been sent off loads of times. And I think Klopp can be at the end of his tether with them at times. And I thought the way things were going, you know, I can see Klopp walking here, you know, for abusing the referee, for pointing out his ineptitude.
Yeah, like you say, both managers have their ways of showing their disgust, if you want, at some of the decisions. And I mean, De Zerbi was like a jack in the box because he was sort of closer to me than Jürgen Klopp was on our side. And he was going apoplectic at times, some of the decisions. But I think that's just how he is. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's almost like, from the first whistle to the last, you know, there were a couple of occasions when Bright were in decent positions and either the final ball or he just didn't pick the right pass. And he was going absolutely apeshit on the side. And it reminds me a bit of how Martin O'Neill used to be when he was manager of Villa and Leicester. He'd be like a jack-in-the-box on the side. So I think, Jürgen did well, especially with some of the decisions that he was given. I think Jürgen did well to stay within the, you know, within the parameters of the game. And, you know, as I say, he's been in trouble before for voicing his opinion, but you wouldn't have been surprised if either or one of them had gone, because some of the decisions, you were turning your head out just at the end, not the end of the game, but by the end, every decision he made that was so poor, I just shook my head and thought, well, he's just got to roll with it because he's not going to get any better, you know what I mean? And you just have to go with it. And thankfully, there was nothing to... I know there was a big penalty shout for Liverpool in the first half, and in fairness, I've not seen the game back. And it went to VAR, but then we had our friend Mr. Tini on VAR, so you never really thought that was going to be looked at again. But I know Nunes went down in a heap. And it's probably the usual thing. There's lots of shirt pulling and jostling in the box. And it always seems to be that the load to give any major decisions on that.
Pete, like my dad didn't go to the match today because he did his back in yesterday. So he messaged me in the first half and said that we should have had a penalty, but I haven't seen it back. But I presume it was that Nunes one.
I think there was a Salah incident as well, because my lad never went. He was working today. And he said to me that there was a nailed-on penalty for Salah. So I'll have to see the game back. I don't know which half that was in, you know.
I bumped into Chris from the radio, Chris Coughlin.
Sorry.
I bumped into Chris on the train on the way home, and he said he was watching the game in the studio today, and he said the Nunes one was soft, but it could have been given. Like, and if he said if it was given on the pitch, it wouldn't have been overruled.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, who knows with Tini, Christ. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, Ben, that was annoying me and annoying a lot of people around me on the cop today was again that the amount of time that Brighton were taking to take the goal kicks and Tini, Coote didn't even warn them at all to up it or anything. And then there was a right on half time, there was like, he gives like a free kick, and then all of a sudden he stops them taking it. And next thing, they take it from a completely different place. Absolute bizarre it was. Anyway, enough of talking about that ineptitude of David Coote. We'll start now to talk about the business of the day and Liverpool's 2-1 victory over Brighton. Pete, on Thursday when we did the preview show, you named the team and you got it absolutely spot on. So obviously you'd had a secret phone call with Jürgen, because already been listening to the podcast, they thought, I'll go with the 11 that Pete's made. And all of a sudden, you know, with the breaking news that we had at the end of that podcast about Xabi not being in the frame to be the next Liverpool manager, is Warburton now in the frame?
I'm sort of just coming off on the outside here, Les. I'll have to tell you, when our Jack was playing youth football, the manager couldn't make it one game, and it's because his son was playing in goal for Merseyside up at Durham. And he said, "Will you take the team, you know, and pick the team and blah, blah, I'll let you do what you want." And they had a resounding 6-1 win against Teswell. So my record is 100%. You know, I mean, if you want to look at anyone else in the frame, no one's going to better my managerial career. I'm pretty sure what it was. It's my love child, Szoboszlai. He phones me up and gives me the news, like, you know. But yeah, I think, to be honest, the front six, if you want to call midfield and attack the front six, I think we all agreed with that. And it was just a case of whether Canarsie started or possibly Kwanzaa, and whether Gomez started or Tsimikas. And I think we second guessed it, really, didn't we? So yeah, it was probably as we all agreed on the last programme. And because of that, the bench looked a little bit stronger today, and that's no disrespect to the kids who have done a sterling job, but the bench looked a little bit better with Gravenberch on the bench, Gakpo on the bench, Elliot on the bench. So it's starting to look a bit stronger. And as this, you know, as we're into the final furlong, if you want, hopefully we'll add a few more names to that in the coming, you know, weeks.
Tom, so, you know, the game starts off and Liverpool have possession down our left-hand side. Their left-hand side with Salah, who sort of gives the ball away. And within about 30 seconds, the ball is in the back of our net and we suddenly find ourselves 1-0 down. And, you know, I think it's the understatement to say that it wasn't actually the start that we wanted or envisaged.
No, it's, tell you what, though, it was a tidy finish, wasn't it? But to be fair, Virgil done everything right there, but it just bobbed up off his foot. And, like, it was perfect for him to hit. And, like, fair play to him. He put his foot right through it. So as you said, it started with Mo. It was a rather slack ball from Mo. You don't see that very often, but it was a poor ball. And then they broke pretty quick. I thought they started off quite sharpish, really. We're a funny side, Liverpool. And, you know, like, I think, you know, like, earlier on in the season, we were starting off like a train. And now we seem to start off the opposite. We seem to start slowly into get into games, you know. I thought we were a bit like, we were careless in our passing. You know, we were, they were pressing well, to be fair to them. But, like, yeah, 2 minutes was not the start we were expecting to be a goal down.
Yeah, Ben, it was a shocking start, you know, to go, you know, such an important match, you know, the first game back after an international break, which is always a difficult game to navigate because, you know, you've got players coming back, you know, at various times that you know, they've been away, you've only had a couple of training sessions, you know, to get them back focused on the job in hand. And all of a sudden, you know, we're playing a really good, well-organised side in Brighton. You know, a team that has got a really good record against us. I don't think we beat them in the previous six or seven games, you know, before today. And then, you know, we find ourselves a goal down after 2 minutes. And all of a sudden you're thinking to yourself, you know, the last thing we want, you know, ahead of this other big game that's coming up after ours is for us to, you know, to not do our job. You know, when everybody was focusing, you know, what do we want the result to be in the other game? But we have to get our result first. And, you know, Tom was quite right there what he said in that, you know, they got the goal. And then even after they got the goal, they were looking really dangerous on the break, weren't they? You know, there was a couple of where the linesman give one offside about 2 minutes after he was offside. There was another one where I thought he was offside and the linesman give them a corner. But Liverpool just couldn't seem to get going for the first maybe 20, 25 minutes of the first half.
No, there was another chance as well. There was another one for Welbeck, I think, where he hit the side netting. I think that was the only two attempts they had in the first half, the goal and that one, I think. The goal was a good finish. It was unfortunate from our point of view that it took two, like, scuffs, didn't it, off our defenders and then just landed to Welbeck, who took it well, to be fair. And Kelleher had absolutely no chance with it. Brighton impressed me for what they were doing with the ball. Not, they didn't look particularly dangerous, but they were good with the ball and they used it well and they played between the lines really well. They're very calm, aren't they, on the ball, the way they play it from the back. And that was one of the best performances from a away team, in the way that they'd give the ball to the anchor in midfield to draw you on and then play it back and then they'd break. And they did that a lot in both halves, and they were impressive the way they did it. But their end product wasn't great, thankfully. But no, like it, the goal from our point of view came from a very, very sloppy pass from Mo. It wasn't a difficult pass, and he just played it straight to the left back, I think it was. But yeah, fair play to Brighton. They took us on the attack, and I think the points you make about the international break, what I would say is thank God we're at Anfield and it wasn't yesterday, because I do think having that day and just not having to travel to an away game does make a big difference, especially when you've got players coming back from South America and all over the globe. But it did. We did take time to get into our groove. But they are a good team, like Brighton. I know they've had some iffy results of late, but they are good. And I think that's the first time Jürgen's beat the Zerbi. So it was a very slow start. But I do think after the first 10, 15 minutes, we did start to get back into it. And I felt we actually started to control the game a little bit more after that period.
Yeah, Ben's right there, isn't he, Pete? In that we did start to, you know, to get him back into the game and start to control it a little bit more. After around about the 20-minute mark, with Joe McAllister starting to stamp his class on the proceedings, you know what I mean? Liverpool started to make openings, and Mo had a couple of opportunities where, you know, he could have done better. Conor Bradley got in. Yo, and it went over the bar, and again, you're thinking he could have done better. You know, there was a penalty shout, you know, on Darwin Nunez. Obviously, at the other end to where I am, you probably had a bit of a better view than we would have had from where we are on the cop. So I don't know whether you thought it was a penalty, but you could see Liverpool start to get a grip of the game and start to get a foothold in. And, you know, you were then just praying that we'd get the equaliser.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to give credit to Brighton. They're a very well organised side. And we were talking to a few Brighton lads after the game, walking up to the pub, and they were going into town. They were staying tonight, and they're having a nice house in town. And I said, they're a very clever side, Brighton. Like Ben said, they try and draw you on from the, you know, goal kicks. I don't like these goal kicks, by the way, where you can have three and four players in the box. And I just don't like them. I think they should go back to the rule where you've got to clear it out the 18-yard line. I think every team, including Accrington Stanley, are trying to do that, and I just don't like it. But yeah, they're a very, very tidy team, I was calling them, tidy in possession, without really hurting us. But they did look at times that if they just played the final ball correctly, they could have opened us up. And they seemed to play on our right-hand side for whatever reason. But I thought Conor Bradley grew into the game from early on, and I thought he had a smashing game today. But, yeah, we were saying to these Brighton lads that, you know, they must be, you know, a good team to follow week in, week out, because you do get good football off them. And it's strange, actually, because you look at the Brighton lineup, and apart from, like, Welbeck and possibly... you know, a couple of names there, you're struggling to find out, you know, who these players are. You know Pascal Gross, and you obviously know, like, the, you know, the centre-back Dunk, because he's been there forever. But you look at some of the names, and you just think, I don't know who they are. That lad who played on the left, Estepin, and whatever his name is, he's so quick, that lad. Fantastic speed on him. But, yeah, like Ben said, he didn't really, you know, you weren't hearting them out stuff. Well, I said to the lad next to me, when they lost possession, they really got into a deep block, and the shape was so tight. And I think Liverpool needed to get wider more often, trying to get in the wide, you know, wide places. And we were trying to go through the middle too much. But yeah, we did get a foothold after about 15, 20 minutes. And we did start looking, we were knocking the ball about a bit, but they were making it awfully difficult for us to get through the lines, to be honest.
Yeah, they were well organised, weren't they, Tom? You know, defensively. You know, they had a good shape about them. Everybody in their team knew the job. The left back, I won't try and say his name. Estepinion, I think his name is, something like that. But he's the lad they signed to replace the lad who went to Chelsea, the left back who went to Chelsea. And he is a good player, that lad. And I think he's one that Liverpool have been linked with in the past. But it was getting frustrating because, you know, we were making decent chances and not taking them. And then all of a sudden, you know, Luis Diaz pops up and puts one into the... A really tidy finish by Luis. But then after he scored, all the Brighton players seemed to surround Coote, as much as I say, you know, they were appealing for something. So, you know, we were all, yeah, as you probably were, you know, you probably stood there on the comp thinking, what the hell's going on here? You know what I mean? Is our mate Tierney going to find a way to disallow this goal? So the celebration of the equaliser was a little bit muted once they seen that, while people waited to see, you know, what was going to happen with the possible VAR review.
Yeah, I thought the way he played it, I've since seen the goal and it comes back and Diaz is definitely onside, so he didn't do anything wrong. The Brighton player played it on, and then he just, as you said, it was a lovely finish by Louis. So, and then it went as. Not only did they round the referee, they pressured it. They were really putting pressure on him, weren't they? And I thought, something's happened bad here to see this, because you're thinking...
It was every player, wasn't it?
I know, yeah. In a circle, as...
Yeah.
And I thought that from the start of the season, I thought the rules were that you book the players if they come round to do that, you know, individually.
Yeah.
You know, and you keep booking them until they go away, you know. But he just looked like, it just looked lost, didn't it? And I thought, like you, I thought, there must be something, there's got to be something for them to be running to, you know, VAR. And it wasn't like a short time. And then when the goal went in, they were still surrounding him, complaining back, you know. But I thought, like you, I think they're a good little side. They're a slick side. They move the ball around really, really quickly. These players, you know, like, and I like the way they play the football. You know, like, they move it quick. It's slick. You've got players running off the ball. They're very difficult to pick up. I think, and added to that, he's got, like, this Italian mentality, isn't he, where, you know, like, it was weird looking at the shape of them. Because once they sort of got back into the position to defend, they were like a half a circle, you know, where there was no room for players to run through. So like they were really organised. But as you said, the chances that we created, like a couple of them for Mo were really good chances. And like you begin to wonder, is it going to be his day? You know, like when he's flying them wide and. And miss kicking them and passing them to the keeper, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was such a relief, wasn't it, Ben, when, you know, when that goal went in from Lucho and you know, the goal was confirmed by VAR, you know, there was nothing wrong with it. And you just thought to yourself, now, you know, we're back on level terms. If we can get another one before half time, great. But if not, you know, we're kicking towards the cup second half. Surely we'll be able to. There'll be a couple of golden chances that we'll create. That will, you know, that will put us in the lead in this game. We've just got to be careful, you know, at the back, not to do anything stupid. But as I say, it was a big sigh of relief, wasn't it? When we went leveled up.
Yeah, I thought we needed to get level before half time. I thought that was imperative, really, for us to do. And I thought it was deserved. I thought, you know, besides Brighton's goal and the one other chance they had, I didn't think they created that much more than that, whereas we did. And I think if Mo Salah was wearing different boots, he could have had easily a hat-trick. But no, I thought I'd love to know what the Brighton players were going about after the goal. I thought it must be offside. I thought that was, but then you look at it and you think they wouldn't be going that mad about being offside, would you? So I don't know what they were going on about because I haven't seen it back. There's nothing controversial about it, is there? But no, it didn't come against them on a play. It was thoroughly deserved. And I did think before that goal went in, we did look like it was, I wouldn't say a matter of time before we scored the goal, but you did feel like one was coming. So I think, Virgil, I don't know if you saw it, Les, but Virgil van Dijk's reaction when he was running back to the cop said a lot to me. He sort of was putting his arms up in the air and just rallying the crowd to go again. And I thought the crowd played the part today. I thought that was a good atmosphere, you know. I know early kickoffs, 2 o'clock early. It is with the hour change, isn't it? Can be a bit rusty, but I thought the atmosphere was good. Even when we were behind, I thought the atmosphere was good. So no, it was good. And I thought getting into half time, you sort of made the point before about the everyone was thinking about what do we want from the later game, and myself included. But all of that would have gone out the window if we wouldn't have, you know, got the result that we did. So, no, it was good. And it was just nice to get into half-time in a position where I felt that we would go on and win the game.
Yeah, Pete,
just touching on the atmosphere there. Yeah. I think that was one of the best pre-match You'll Never Walk Alone I did for a long time.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
It was as though, like
you say, I mean, it certainly helped with the Annie Road being extended. I mean, upstairs in the Annie Road,
you'll
see it from the cop. The number of scarves that are held aloft and that, and the noise that tumbles down from there. Mm. But I think every Liverpool fan in that ground today realised this is like I mentioned before, this is the final run-in now.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what.
Need to be, you know, for every game like that.
I'll tell you what, Peter. I reckon there's more scarves in the Annie Road then nowadays than the cop.
Probably
you put the cop to shame when they
massively
You'll never walk alone. The lads on the cop need to get their act together and show you know that they're red and white is the colour and let's show our scarves and be proud to do so. But Pete, we goes in at half time level, which as Ben said, you know, I agree with him really. It was imperative that we went in at least level. You know what I mean? If we'd have gone in behind, I'd have been fair in the worst if we hadn't scored in the first 15 minutes or so, you know, after second half, because, you know, the pressure would have increased, the anxiety would have increased with the crowd. But as it was, because we were level, I think that calmed everybody down a bit and thought, right, you know, we can go again. And we started off the second half well, didn't we? Liverpool seemed to change. They squeezed up a lot more. Virgil was sort of, you know, winning the ball in the cop half, so to speak. You know, and Liverpool trying to stop them, sort of getting over the top. And obviously that was something that the Klopp had sort of, you know, told the lads to do at half time.
Yeah, I think like you say, we certainly needed to go in with parity because, like you say, if we're, I mean, I never panic when Liverpool go behind.
Tom,
yeah,
you know, we what you call it, then, as Pete was saying there, you know, we started off the second half, you know, quite well, didn't we?
Yeah,
you know, and it was important that we made a good start, and we sort of, you know, started to put them on the back foot a little bit.
Yeah, I thought in the second half, Les, I thought Nunes pushed a bit tight in the second half. I think he had the most innocuous first half I've seen for Liverpool. You know, like I thought he had a quieter game, to say the least. But I think in the second half, he pushed up a little tighter on Duncan. He was having a little bit more joy in the second half. And that allowed Lucio to move a little bit. And as you said, we started to create a few chances. Again, in the second half, it was similar to what we were talking about before, when Ben was saying before. We were creating chances, but they were sort of like, again, we weren't really taking advantage of the chances that we were creating. And I don't know about it. I think more so, since I've been since I've been away and then come back today, I know you noticed there was a little bit of not anxiety in the crowd, because in the second half, but in the first 10, 5, 10, 15 minutes, there was more moaning than there normally is, you know, which surprised me, because I thought we were doing all right, really. But as you say, we started to create and push up tighter on them and put them under a bit more pressure. And you had the feeling that it wouldn't be long before the second goal was going to come.
Yeah, Pete, you were saying before you disappeared on us there, yeah, the wonders of modern technology, I cut you off. You were saying there you never really get too worried when Liverpool go behind in a game. And as I say, the start of the second half was encouraging, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, you know, even you go behind and you think, well, this team's got it in them to come back all the time. And it was such an early goal. I think if Brighton could have chosen a time to score the first goal, it wouldn't have been in the second minute. It'd probably been the 42nd minute. But as I say, you'd always believe in this team that they're good enough to come back and not just get parity with the other team, but to go on and win it. I think what they did well in the second half, from the start of the second half, they seemed to close down that lad, the Ecuadorian lad whose name we can't pronounce, the left back, because he was a terror. I said to one of the lads next to me, they've got to take his spark plugs out, because I thought he was on a motorbike. He's so quick, that lad. But they weren't necessarily laying off them in the first half. But as I say, they were just finding little triangles and passing through us. And I think as the start of the second half, you know, we got the second half underway, we were a lot sharper in the tackle and we were nullifying any sort of breaks. They had a couple of breakaways in the second half. He had a couple of half chances, if you want. But I just thought the start of the second half, we started so well. And like you were saying, I think we all knew deep down it's a matter of time before we get another goal.
And 65 minutes, Ben, yo, that goal come. And it was good work by, you know, Szoboszlai in the first instance, and a magnificent pass by McAllister, you know, to set him up, who finished, you know, supremely well. You know what I mean? It was such a relief when that ball at the back of the net and you're seeing no linesman's flag up. Hmm. Everything seemed to be A-OK and you were now in the lead. And then the thought was, well, now let's try and get a third one to put this to bed. But let's just talk about that goal, and the pass from McAllister was just sublime, wasn't it?
He's just a brilliant player. I think if Szoboszlai is Pete's love child, then I think McAllister is, he's definitely mine. Like, I absolutely love him. Everything about him, he's a brilliant player. He's tough. He's exactly what you want in a midfielder. And I was saying to the lads afterwards in the pub, the best thing about him today is he didn't care it was against Brighton. Like, you know, when you see, like, players playing against their old teams, and not that they're not trying or anything, but he would have celebrated if he scored today. I've got no doubt about it. And that's what players should do. They should celebrate against their old clubs. I hate it when they don't. Even our ex-players, when they score against us, they should celebrate. They're getting paid by the new club. But he's just a phenomenal player. He's grown into being a Liverpool player. And he's getting better and better. It was a brilliant ball. It was a great move. Like, it was. Did you describe it as slick? Is that how you described it?
Sublime.
Yeah. Sublime. Well, yeah. I mean, it was. It was just one touch. Great, and it was comfortably the best thing that Mo did all day. I didn't think he had his best game, but he took that really well. That goal. And I think he needed that. I think if he wouldn't have scored that goal today, I think he would have been sulking until Thursday. But no, it was a brilliant move. It came at a really good time. I thought we started the second half on the front foot, really, really positively. I thought Bradley was great. He was finding a lot of space in the right. I didn't think Szoboszlai had his best game, but I said to Rach, my wife, who was next to me today, and my mate, the other side, we don't half miss him when he's not on the pitch. I thought going back to the United game, I thought when he went off, that was the turning point. And I thought that would have been the case today if he went off earlier on. But no, it was a good move. It was like you said, it was a shame that we couldn't build on it. But I thought when we got that goal, you could feel the relief, as Tom was saying. I don't think the crowd was as anxious as it would have been last year, because there is a lot more belief now. But it did feel like a sense of relief. And you could see it on the players, the way they celebrated it as well. Although Mo was very calm, wasn't he? He didn't do his normal celebration. He just put his arms out and sort of was like, I am the man.
You think he thought he might have been offside, Ben? And that's why he sort of celebrated too much. Because the ball came to him so quickly, if you like. And he just, in one move, so he didn't have a... He didn't have an opportunity to sort of look around. He just finished it and then sort of celebrates. But he might have thought that he was...
Yeah, possibly. But he sort of celebrated the United goal in the same way, didn't he? I don't know. Maybe he's trying to play it a little bit more calm than ripping his shirt off all the time. Yeah. But it was it deserved the finish, didn't it? It was a great move. I think it was the move of the match.
Yeah. Tom, it was... Your view on that pass from McAllister and the finish, you know, it was top class, absolutely top quality. And he's got to be, you know, when you think about the signings that all the clubs have made, you know, this season, and, you know, there's a few of them who could be in the frame, but he has to go down as the, when you consider the price, he has to go down as the signing of the season, doesn't he, Tom?
Surely. He's brilliant, Les, isn't he? I was the player I always wanted to come to Liverpool, and you just see him. Ben used a good analogy there. He's got better, but you know what I love about him, Les? He can pass the ball to him. It doesn't matter how many men he's got round him. It doesn't matter how much space there is. He's got the time and the space to find more space, you know, to keep the ball under control and to see a pass and play the pass. I just think his performance today was just like out of this world. Do you know what? There's a term, isn't it? We give this term, and the last time we used the term, like, it was for Alonso, and used the word playmaker, and he is a playmaker. He makes things happen, you know, like, and I've since seen the goal on the TV later on, and like it showed you it. And so Bosley is running down, and he's looking, he knows the ball's going to come to him, and he's looking all around him, so he knows who's where. So as soon as the ball comes to him and he gets it, he plays it. Because he knows the Salah's in an unmarked position. It was a sublime goal. It was brilliant. The pass was out of this world, and the finish, Mo just put it away, and that was perfect. And so from that, you think, well, this is it. Now we're going to blow these away, and we nearly did, right? And we're going to talk about the third, which was taken away by millimeters again. Mm-hmm. You know, straight after we scored again.
Yeah,
you know that's it. The game's dead and buried. But Mr. Tierney.
Yeah, Pete. That reminded me, that pass and the finish. It was like taking you back in time to the 80s with, you know, Kenny getting the ball and shoving it through to Rushy and Rushy finishing. That's how high I think that pass was. You know what I mean? Because it was that quick. It was like a blink of an eye. He seen that pass and shoved it through. And as I say, it was eye of the needle stuff, Pete.
Yeah. People listening to this who haven't seen the game, and I haven't seen the rerun of it, in fairness, but they'll probably think, oh, he must be talking about a 30, 40-yard pass here that split the defence. It was a short pass, but it had the exact weight that needed to go to Mo. And like you say, Mo, in just one sort of blink of an eye, turned and buried it. And the first thing I did, I looked up to the line just to see if the linesman had put his flag up, and thankfully he hadn't. We're all going on about, you know, how well McAllister's coming, because when he first started in the number six role, which isn't his preferred role, by the way. He wasn't getting pelters, but people were saying, oh, I don't think he's the player we thought he was. But my God, in the last 2 or 3 months, he's not half shown just what world class he is. And I think in fairness to Ben and I, we did say that he'd be like this when Endo was in the starting lineup as well.
We did, Pete. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. I was waiting for that. The midfield sort of the sort of played today and played against Manchester City was the midfield that you sort of both said should be Liverpool's first choice midfield, to be fair.
Mm.
And yeah, you know, you can't sort of, you know, argue with that anymore. You know, it is Liverpool's first choice midfield, and it's just been unfortunate for Curtis.
Well,
picked up an injury at the wrong time.
I'm going to jump in a little bit there. It's our first choice midfield now. I think when Curtis Jones fit, I don't know if it's a guaranteed first choice. I think him or Szoboszlai is interchangeable at the moment.
Yeah,
I think you miss Szoboszlai too much when he's not there.
No, honestly, Les, if Szoboszlai plays to his potential, yeah, but he isn't at the moment.
I thought he was absolutely excellent today.
He was good. I don't think he was excellent.
I thought his pressing and his covering and his overall weight.
You get that from Jones, today, though. You would get that from Jones.
There's different type of players, though. Curtis sort of looks after the ball really well, but sometimes he doesn't release it as quick as he should do. And I like Curtis, and there's times, you know, where, and I do think they'll both play the part between now and the end of the season. But for me, if you're asking me, you know, who would be my first choice midfield for the remainder of the league games, which for me are the important ones now, it'd be the three that started today.
I guess, Les, we got past, the team midfield got past right the way through from the 70th minute, 70th, 80th minute. They were just cutting through the midfield with passing. So while I accept what you're saying, I still think we need a defensive midfielder. I think Endo's doing a brilliant job at the moment on what's it called. But to go on a 9-game run, I'm not so sure that would be a midfield from now to the end of the season when everybody's fit and back. I think Trent has got a part to play, whether he plays in midfield or whether he plays a fullback, we don't know yet, but Trent will have a part to play as well.
I don't think we'll see Trent in midfield while Jürgen's manager.
Maybe not, but yeah, I think you'll find that the midfield will alternate between now and the end of the season, I think. But I agree with you about Szoboszlai. I thought Szoboszlai was better today, Les. I didn't think he was brilliant, but I thought he pressed well and he done well. And I think he looks as if he's coming back, as what we say, with his 4 or 5 games to get match sharp. I think he looks sharper than he did the last couple of times he's played. I think he's starting to look more like the Szoboszlai he was at the early part of the season.
Pete, for me, it's Szoboszlai's presence. His presence in that midfield sort of gives us an extra dimension, I think. And I think that when he went off against Man United in the cup, that's when we started to lose control. Now, admittedly, at that point, we didn't have a Curtis Jones to bring on. So if you'd have brought a Curtis Jones on then for Szoboszlai, everything might have just continued, right? But I just feel as though, as a fan, when I see him on the team sheet, I just think his presence alone, and he's such a classy footballer, the way he carries the ball, and the way he sort of, you know, gets around the field. And I just think, and he's the one, I think, that Jürgen's got, you know, trying to sort of lead the press. And I think the difference between him at the start of the season and now is that I think at the start of the season, he was still learning how Jürgen wanted him to play. And I think that his role's been defined a little bit more now. I think to fit in with the team rather than him standing out as an individual. I think, and that's why I think he's not, you know, people are thinking that he's dropped off a little bit, but I think he's a little bit like, you know, Gino Wijnaldum in many ways now. And I think that's what, you know, Klopp wanted to mould him in, but he's got a bit more class than Ginny. That's just my opinion.
I think he had a far better second half today than he did in the first half. But I think, like what you said, a lot of people who criticise players, and it's not just Szoboszlai, it's any player, they only comment when they're actually on the ball. And you've got it, like you say, he's the one leading the press, and when we're without the ball, he does a lot of work that way. I mean, people used to have a go at Henderson for the last couple of years when he was at Liverpool. And I always used to say, Jordan Henderson did his best work without the ball. And that wasn't being disrespectful. He knew when to press and he knew when to, you know, to fall back. And like you say, I think he went off like a rocket at the start of the season because he was an unknown quantity. But like you say, he's probably now playing the role that Jürgen wants him to play. And, you know, he's not going to be all guns firing. He had a shot in the second half today that was, I think, the keeper put round the post. It was on target. But like you say, it's his all-round play, and it's not just when he's on the ball. It's also when he's off the ball and he's committed to the press. And, you know, he's sort of learning when to go and when to stay in that position. So I thought second half today, he had a really good second half. First half, maybe not so, but that was when Brighton were in the ascendancy, really, when they were finding little gaps between our lines. And then, obviously, whatever was spoken about at half-time, that was rectified because we were far, far more superior in the second half.
So, Tom, you mentioned it before. You know, we get the second one, and then shortly after, we think we've put the game to bed when Luis Diaz scores. And we look over, and the linesman's flags up. From where I was, you know, my sort of seat or where to stand on the cop. Like, I didn't think he was anywhere near being offside. I was really shocked when I saw the linesman's flag up, and I couldn't work out whether the linesman had given Mo off or Lucho off. So, you know, it goes over to our friend Mr. Tierney at VAR, and I haven't seen it back again, so I'm only going from my memory of where I was in the ground. And it's chalked off for offside. So, have you seen it back? And what was your view of it in the ground, Tom?
I haven't seen it back, Les. But I spoke to our Michael, and I was speaking to all the lads who were down, and all my lads are down in Wales. And every one of them said, "Oh, Dad, it was really, really close." He said, everyone who's seen it saying like that, it was, you know, like it was millimeters. If you, he said, even the commentary, apparently, Michael said to me, said, "This is on." He said, he's level. He said, he's level with him, so it's on. But I get the feeling, you said a very interesting thing earlier on in the season. And, you know, I was thinking about it today, funny enough, when it got called offside. And I think they brought VAR in to make the game better. But for me, what they're doing is what you said. They're looking to disallow goals, which are good goals. Do you know what I mean? For like the most ridiculous things, like fractions of, like, you know, like, and it's subjective, isn't it? Because where they draw the line, if it was AI, and it was AI, and he was saying it was straight, if they made the decision there and then, and the robot made, or the computer made the decision, and then that's factual, because that's given it. It's a human being drawing lines.
Mind you, Tom, just come back in there a little bit. We've seen the computer version of it when they give Mo Salah offside in the Europa League. So I don't think
the computer, because the information still has to be inputted into the computer.
That decision might have been made by an overzealous referee, that, to be fair, Les. I don't think no AI could make a mistake like that.
Well, they did, but it was just, I mean, until we see it back, you know what I mean? But in the ground, it looked
I've seen it, Les. I have seen it. It's incredibly tight. It's one of those ones before VAR was introduced. You know, when you see them on Match of the Day or Sky or whatever, and you think, he's on, he's level. That's what you describe it as.
Line, to be fair, even if there hadn't been any VAR, the linesman gave it.
Yeah, he did give it, yeah. I don't know how he gave it, though, honest to God.
I've seen a still of it, and the two lines are actually merging. It was that close.
That's what I mean, Pete. It's level. It's what you describe as level, isn't it?
Yeah.
Looking to disallow goals for that, that is really subjective, isn't it? Because
they would say it's a matter of fact, Tom. It was the other one. What you think is that the one in the in the League Cup final, you would say it's subjective.
They draw the line from when the ball is passed, don't they? And it's the Man City.
They say that's a matter of fact, though, don't they, Tom? That's what they say. The offsides are a matter of fact.
Yeah, so, but they say he'll say when he goes to play the ball. They draw the line from when he plays the ball.
Yeah.
So it's when his foot touches the ball, did he draw the line?
I mean, they can still get it wrong, though, because it's still a person drawing a line, physically drawing a line on a computer. It's not the computer, like Les is saying, the AI that's doing it. It's a human that has to input information into a computer. They can still get it wrong. I've got no doubt that a lot of the times with these offsides, they probably are. But who knows? I mean, I'm hesitant to get into the offside debate because everyone's got a different opinion on what should be offside, what shouldn't be. Should there be daylight? Shouldn't there be? Is a toenail offside? I mean, the point I will say is, who the hell wanted VAR to do this?
Definitely.
That's probably the newest statement that's ever been made. You wanted VAR, and the problem is you wanted VAR to stop the howlers. For example, like the Raheem Sterling one that was called offside against
the penalty yesterday, Les. The penalty for Newcastle against West Ham. That's never a penalty, that.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's what you want. You didn't, but now they seem when a goal is scored, they seem to look for a reason to disallow the goal.
Yeah.
Where it should be the other way around. They should be looking for a reason to allow the goal. And that was a fan. When you see a goal that's scored against you, and especially when you're watching the game on TV, you're actually thinking, oh, is there anything wrong here that they can disallow it for?
Yeah.
Whereas you never used to watch a match with that sort of, you'd moan at the referee or the line saying that was offside, whatever. Mm. And that's what I thought. I remember a game in the season before VAR come in, where I've got a feeling that maybe Howard Webb was the referee. I think it was the 4-4 game against Arsenal a few years before VAR come in. And you think to yourself, we should have had a penalty in the end for a foul on Benny Yoon, and Webb didn't give it. And you know, when VAR come in, you're thinking, well, that would have been given.
Mm.
If VAR had been in, but now you know it wouldn't have done.
No. I mean, for me,
the Vincent Kompany sort of challenge on Mo Salah in the game, the City 1-2-1. And you know, that was a yellow card was given by Anthony Taylor. And you'd have thought, well, if we'd have VAR in, that would have been, you know, upgraded to a red. Mm. And I remember watching the programme and it was Neil Swarbrick who was on, and he said no, it wouldn't have been. So as you said, and you're absolutely spot on, we never wanted VAR for this.
No.
You know, but we've got it, and it's not going to go away now.
It's not, and it's not just that. I mean, we all spend an absolute fortune on following Liverpool, and like it's just took all the spontaneity like away from like every time a goal scores, you're like, can I celebrate this or not? Even in the last minute, like I remember the worst example for me was earlier in this season, the Newcastle game. With Nunes' second goal, I sat in my chair watching it and I didn't celebrate. And I said to my dad, I think that's offside. There's going to be something wrong with it. And I just literally, I waited until about the third replay. And then you can celebrate the goal. And football's not like that. I would much rather take a wrong decision every so often for going back and scrapping VAR. 100%.
Yeah. So, Tom, that goal's disallowed and we have another couple of chances to try and, you know, get the third goal. The keeper makes a couple of good saves, one especially from Mo, where he sorts it down to his sort of right-hand side. The keeper made a really good save. And then at the other end, Keller made an exceptional save from a header to keep it as 2-1 ahead. And then also made, from the resulting corner, made another important save. And it just shows, doesn't it, how much, you know, if Alisson would have made that save, we'd have been saying, that's why he's the best in the world. And it just shows, doesn't it, how much Kells has sort of stamped himself and shown what a quality keeper is over these past few weeks.
Brilliant, Les. I thought the second save was the better one, wasn't it? He did brilliant save, full stretch, and saying that away. Yeah, exceptional. He's done really well since he's come in, Keller. You know, like, so much so that we don't even talk about Alisson coming back at the moment. He's been fantastic. The one you talked about with Mo as well. I thought he was really unlucky there. I thought their keeper down at the Kop end made a brilliant save. Yeah. Brilliant save.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as you said, the game finished with a couple of late flourishes, didn't it? Like, you know, with
Danny Welbeck died net as well.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, and like, so like, I was glad when it come to the, you know, like when the whistle come, it come a bit nerve-wracking towards the end.
Yeah, it was important, wasn't it, Pete, that we seen out that he, you know, the added 6 minutes. You know, just one thing I wanted to say as well before. You know, Harvey Elliott, Gravenberch and Gakpo all come on. And Harvey Elliott nearly scored with his first touch from a header, which was brilliantly cleared off the line by a Brighton defender. But it was important, wasn't it, that we seen out the final 6 minutes, despite a few little sort of long decisions by the players. You know, Joe Gomez hitting the ball to a Brighton defender when we just needed to keep it. Harvey Elliott trying to bring the ball down on the touchline when he should have just let it go out, you know, for a throw into Liverpool. But eventually we got the control of the ball for the last few minutes, and it was such a relief, wasn't it, when our friend David Coop made the best decision of the day and blew his final whistle for two reasons. One, we got the 3 points. And the second reason was, you know, bye-bye, David Coop. Hopefully we won't be seeing you at Anfield again for the rest of this season.
It was funny when Harvey came on, because it was a corner, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I said something cheek to the lads next to me. Oh, they brought Harvey Elliott on for his height for the corner. Look at me, nearly scored from it with the header. We were all laughing. How funny. There were a couple of occasions towards the end. I think Lallana had a shot skewed past the post. I think he meant that, to be honest. I don't think he'd hurt us that much. But yeah, there were a couple of occasions in the finals, you know, the extra time, the 6 minutes, where we just needed to keep the ball. I don't mind if it's boring and we're just passing it along the back and we're just, you know, even playing the channels. I think I said that after the United game, when we give the ball away cheaply for them to equalise for 3-3. Sometimes you just play percentages and you just, you know, I'm saying, just whack it up the Kop end from us, because I'm down the other end. Just whack it up the Kop end and put it into touch and get your shape back. And yet there were a couple of occasions, I think Gakpo, I think it was one of the Dutch lads, either Gakpo or Gravenberch, decided to take them on and try and have a shot. And I'm saying, just keep the bloody ball. Because, like you say, Joe Gomez tried to play a pass inside and we lost possession. And then all of a sudden, it's quite audible from the crowd that there's panic stations. And in fairness, they didn't... He didn't look like they were going to equalise. Maybe that Lallana shot aside. I think we were pretty comfortable in the extra 6 minutes. But you just want to, you know, if we had got that third goal that was disallowed, you know, it'd have made it so much easier. But it was good that we had the wherewithal to see it out. And, you know, it's one down at 9 league games to go. So I think we're going to have more jitters coming towards the end of the season.
Yeah, just say to you, Pete, you've got one tick on your last 10 predictions because you predicted a Liverpool win and a draw for the 115ers against Arsenal. So you've had a good start. Yeah. So I did say I wanted your predictions to come true because you had been by 6 points. So well done for that, people. Ben, I'll come to you now on this. I think I know what your answer is going to be, but man of the match, please.
Right, there's two. Right, I'll give you three names, but I think there's two in contention for it. I thought Conor Bradley deserves a mention. I thought he was good again. I'm going to throw another name in, so four, Kelleher. I thought Kelleher deserves a shout. Luis Diaz, I thought, had one of his better games. He obviously scored, and he was a constant threat for us in the first half. He was by far and away our best attacker. But I think, ultimately, the man of the match is our little South American midfielder from Argentina, Mr. McAllister. Brilliant.
Pete, who are you going for?
I've got four names circled, and they're more or less the same as Ben. Conor Bradley, as I say, he didn't have a shaky start, but Brighton were trying to get up our right side defensively, and then once he got the measure of it, I thought he had a great game. I thought Diaz as well, obviously there was his goal, but his all-round play, he was energetic, he was trying to make things happen. Endo, once again, just fantastic, what a player that lad is. Just came right in under the radar, no one even knew about him, and what a player he's been.
Peace. But just I've got before to agree, you, just before you McAllister. Move on to what? Your last name, can you remember that what? Chance in the second half where he came flying in their box for a header? I've never seen anything. he must have jumped. And he kept going for about 20 yards. It's just brilliant.
Yeah. Well, Endo, I thought once again had a fantastic game, but I think for the full 90 minutes, and like we spoke about the pass to set up Salah, McAllister once again, he just makes us tick. He's a fantastic player. So I'd have to give it to McAllister.
Tom, who's your vote?
I think the first two, I had my mind made up. I was Conor Bradley, I thought, as I said to you before, when I was speaking to you before we come on, I said, come watching Conor Bradley for the first time from behind it in the cop, looking at him and watching the runs he makes off the ball and all the other stuff he does. You don't see that when you're watching it on the TV. So I was really impressed with Conor Bradley. I thought he was outstanding. All for most of the stuff, his work rate, his reading of the game and everything. I thought he was exceptional. I thought Diaz had a really good game. And you know what? I want to mention Joe Gomez as well, because I thought Joe, he's asked to play in all different positions and he gives us all whenever he plays. But McAllister for me, Les, he's head and shoulders better than anybody. He's just an exceptional player. I think we need to keep him fit from now to the end of the season. And that will be, I think, get a few players back and I think Liverpool will be fine for the title.
Yeah, I'll agree with Pete and Ben in some of the names. You know, I thought Conor Bradley, Luis Diaz, Endo, Kelleher were all good today. You know, but McAllister was just head and shoulders above everybody. You know, the pass, but his all-round game, that pass was the highlight. So it's a full house for Alexis, for his performance today. Tom, so after our game, it was the 115ers against Arsenal. And we got the perfect result we wanted, and the reason I've come to you first on this one is you sent me a surprise in text. Do you remember what you put in that text, Tom?
The Manchester City look an old. That one you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, Manchester City look an old aging side. I think they look a team, and Kevin De Bruyne has had his best days, lad. I think Arsenal, I think looking now from now to the end of the season, I think everyone's going to disagree with this, but I don't care. I think Arsenal are the team that'll probably run us the closest.
No.
I thought that, Ben, and in my watch.
Did you see the game today, Tom?
I did see the game today. They didn't try it today, Ben.
No, they went for a point, didn't they?
They tried not to lose the game, and they tried to see out the game, and that's what they've done. And you know what? They've took 4 points off Manchester City, whether likeable or what's it called. They've taken 4 points off Liverpool, whether we disagree or what's it called. We were robbed against them, but they. Do you know what? I was made up with that result today, and I'm glad Peter picked that result because I thought Manchester City I thought City winning would burst their bubble, and I think you know they're going to run us really close. I think they're the team that's going to shock us. I think.
Ben, you sort of shaking your head there and disagreeing with Tom.
I agree with what Tom said about City. I'm not quite sure if they're an aging team, but what I will say is one of my good mates, and I won't name names here, is a coach at Man City. And it was interesting what he said today. He's not like a first team coach or anything like that. But he said about Kevin De Bruyne that he thinks that it's going to be his last season at City just because he does think he's dropped off a bit, and it'll be Pep's quite ruthless on stuff like that, and he'll try and replace him. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. I'd take him, you know. I'd take Kevin De Bruyne for a year. Honestly, I'd love to see him in a Liverpool shirt. But I still think City will be... If we don't win the league this year, I think it'll be City. I don't think it'll be Arsenal. I think City scare the crap out of me when they go on runs like this. And I know that we do the same to them. I'm still sceptical if Arsenal have got that in them. I think with the Champions League coming up and the potential of them playing each other in the semi-final, which I think for us is just perfect on every level, I think I'm really hopeful that they do play each other in that semi-final and they just knock each other out. So I didn't want Arsenal... Sorry, I didn't want Man City to win today, even though that would have been the better result for us. But I think a 0-0, a draw, was perfect in every way for us, really. The only thing that would have made it better is a few send-ins off.
Yeah, Pete, it was a strange game to watch, wasn't it? Because, you know, normally you want one team or the other to sort of score. And every time one of the teams was going forward, you were saying, keep them out, miss. You know what I mean? And it was one of those type of games, wasn't it? Because a draw was the perfect result for us. I tend to agree with a lot of what Tom said, in that I do think City, I think everybody gets carried away because of the name Manchester City, but I just think that whereas last year they had Mahrez and Gundogan, who would get them goals when they needed them. This year they've got Doku and Kovacic, right? And I just don't think those two players are good enough replacements for the two they've missed. And that could be... I'm not saying City are not a good side. They still got great possession. They still try to do the same things. But I just don't think that they're at the same level as they were for the previous three seasons when they won the league. That's my opinion. I don't know whether you agree with that, Pete.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, you know, they've dropped points, you know, earlier on in the season that you wouldn't have expected them to. I'm just having a look at their running. You would think City's running is a little bit easier than Arsenal's. I say easier on paper, obviously. I know they've got Madrid in the semi, but they've got Chelsea at the Etihad, and they've got to go to Brighton. And I was saying to these Brighton lads after the game, you better put a performance on against City for us. And he said, we normally do play well against them at home.
You've already played Chelsea at the Etihad, Pete. They drew 1-1.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at the FA Cup. It's the...
Yeah, you're looking at the FA Cup game, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'm looking at, to be honest. I think it's just fixture list. But they've got to go to Fulham we've got to go to Fulham, and they're a funny side. They can turn it on when they want, or they can be us a dire. They finished the season at home to West Ham, as they have done in previous seasons. But I think looking at the running, you would say City probably have a better running than Arsenal have got.
They've got
But
a lot. City and Arsenal's mirror each other in many ways. They've both got Aston Villa at home. I think
yeah.
they've both got Tottenham away.
They've both got Brighton away as well.
They've both got Luton at home, which you would say is a given, with the way Luton defend. I think somewhere, you know, that there are going to be. I said when we had our talk last time about picking points up, I still think we've got to win nine out of, well, it's now eight out of nine. I think we've got to win.
That's not what you did in your predictions. You've got us winners by 6 points here.
Yeah, I'm talking about us. We'll win it by 6 points. But what I'm saying is, I still think we've got to win eight out of the last nine.
Yeah,
I think the one team that's going to really, really have a big say in it, because they've got to play us all, is Tottenham.
And
they can have a big, big say.
Villa.
Yeah. And Villa as well. I mean, Villa have got City, I think. Next game, haven't they?
Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. And City have got two injuries, haven't they? They've picked up Ben injuries to the Dutch centre back, you know, today, haven't they? You know what I mean? So,
he's been playing well, actually, hasn't he? He's
yeah,
been doing well.
Did he get injured today?
Yeah, he got it. He's done his job.
Saying that though, Ollie Watkins went off injured yesterday for Villa, didn't he?
Mm.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, Villa.
We're all trying to be soothsayers here, aren't we? We're all trying to look into the future, and I think, in fairness, some of the predictions that three of us said last programme, you know, I don't know, I think more, not sort of hope over expectation, but we're looking at it from a Liverpool point of view, and I think every game Liverpool play.
I don't think it's going to be like when us and City used to go like toe and toe in the last 10 games with drop 2 points or whatever. I don't think it's going to be anything like that, you know. I don't think us, Arsenal and City are as good as what we were back then, the three teams. I don't think we're at the level that we were when we won.
You also, I don't think our strikers are as good as they were in the prime. I think our midfield is better. I think the options we've got in midfield is much better than we had in the season where we got those, we run City really close. I think the midfield options are much, much better.
They might be less, but when we had the team that won the league, we got 103 points out of 105.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal. I don't think that will ever happen again.
I think this midfield is a better, has got more depth. That's what I'm saying.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Whereas with that midfield, when there was a couple, if there was a couple out injured, the level did drop alarmingly. You know what I mean? Where
it was a different style, wasn't it? We're not as reliant now on that front three because, well, it doesn't exist. But that whole team was based on that front three, and the midfield were not journeymen, but they were hard workers rather than the flair players that we've got now, aren't they? So
So, Pete. Moving ahead to a quick preview for Thursday. Have you had your pen and paper out? Is an unchanged scene for you? Or is Ibu in for Kwanzaa? Or do we keep Ibu back for the game against United next Sunday?
I've more or less got the same team that started today. The only person either ors I've got is whether it's going to be Kanasi or Kwanzaa. And I'm wondering if Kanasi might get 45 minutes. He was on the bench today, so he's obviously fit enough. And then the other query is at left back, does Gomez start? Does Simicast start? And where does Robbo in his fitness? Maybe Robbo might make the bench. So I think it's more or less the same team as today, apart from Konate or Kwanzaa and Gomez or Simicast for me.
What do you make of that team, Tom? What would you do? Unchanged?
I think if Robbo's fit, I think Robbo might come back if he's not as badly injured as he said. It was just an impact knock, I think. Or Simicast, he's been out of the equation, hasn't he, for the last couple of games. But I think I can see Canate coming in for Gyrel if he's fit. And I think Kiesis might be back on the bench, Les.
Yeah,
before I think the forward line will probably stay the same.
Yeah, I think as well, it's good news, isn't it, Tom? You mentioned them. I think the other night, Bešetić is going to start training with the under-21s this week for a couple of weeks, and then hopefully to be back, you know, in contention for the first team in a couple of weeks' time, maybe by the second leg of the Europa League. So that is good news, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, excellent news to see him back. It just gives him what we were talking about. You just need some extra legs there, don't we? Now we need Jota back as well. You need Curtis back. We need Trent, you know, for the last 9 games. You're going to need all these players. They're all going to have a part to play, even if it's only a small part to play. We're going to need them during the running if we're going to take the maximum points there, Les.
Yeah. Ben, are you going for Ibuin for Kwans and possibly Robbo coming back in, or are you going for an unchanged side?
I wouldn't go for an unchanged team, Les. I'd think I'd stick with Kwanzaa because of the level of the opposition and save Ibu for the United game at the weekend. But I wouldn't be surprised if Harvey Elliott gets a start midweek, potentially up front as well. I don't know where it'd fit in. But I think the left-back one's an option because I think against Sheffield United, we shouldn't need to play a defensive fullback. So I would like to see the Greek, if he's fit, which I think he is. He was on the bench, wasn't he? If Robbo's doesn't make it, I would give one of them a start at left-back as well.
Yeah, OK. I mean, I think I agree with you. I'd keep Kwanzaa back, possibly do what I think Tom suggested and possibly give them 45 minutes each, him and Ibu. But certainly I'd want Ibu starting against Man United next Sunday. Just a quick prediction. I'll go for you first, Ben.
I mean, we should win, shouldn't we? It should be comfortable. It's one of those games where we should be able to get the goal difference up. I'll go for a 4-0.
Pete, what are you going for?
I was thinking 3-0. It's funny, pre-kickoff today with the lad next to me, he said, let's just have a game where we can relax and, you know, and enjoy it. And within 2 minutes, we go a goal down. So I'm not saying it's going to be a cakewalk by any means, but I'm going to say 3-0, final score.
Tom, what are you going for, prediction?
3-0 for Liverpool, Les.
3-0, and I'm going for 3-0 as well. So on that note, we'll end this edition of the LFC Late Flag Red Poets podcast. Thanks to Ben, Pete and Tom for joining me tonight. As we always end this podcast by saying, justice for the 97, don't bite the sun and you'll never walk alone. Until next time, see you soon.